We have a number of bills up that, first I will point out the ones that are not going to be dealt with today, so folks will understand that. On House Bill 3374, we are still awaiting drafts of amendments from Legislative Council. That's still on the agenda for tomorrow, so we intend to proceed with that bill tomorrow. We will deal with firearms at some point, 2535, if everybody leaves the Representative Byers Committee on Consumer and Business Services and wants to come up here and talk to us about firearms, but we're not dealing with that right away. We'll let them do their thing in the other room, and we'll do our own thing here later if we need to. There's no formal amendments ready for a work session anyway. I simply wanted to give us a chance to have a discussion. House Bill, well, I'll skip over the ones that appear ready. House Bill 3395, there's still amendments being crafted, trying to handle the domestic violence issue alone. So we will hold that over. The HDRs have been handled. On House Bill 2807 and 2808, we are waiting on those. 2808 may not even proceed. 2807 is a vehicle I think we're looking at, but we are planning on looking at Senate Bill 740, is it?
Correct.
On Friday, we're holding a public hearing on that bill because it has a lot of these issues in it, and we certainly want to have a global perspective about these issues. So 2807 and I guess 2808, just to be careful, will both be set Friday. It's 2808 that may be the action piece. We'll set both of those for Friday, and we can do Senate Bill 740 and then see if the House bills still need any action or if there's an issue, maybe we'll even raise it with the Senate bill. But those will not have work session today. 2996 is off permanently. For anybody who thought that Representative Jensen finally basically withdrew pushing that measure. And 2352 and 2353 are not ready or not to be acted on yet. We're waiting. They would really flow from the Victims' Rights Amendments and what we do with those. And finally, 3343 is on the agenda simply to allow us to refer to the Education Committee. And I would do that quickly, except I'm real curious as to why they want it. And since Representative Cinceri is the chair of the Education Committee, and there he is. Hi. Representative Cinceri has just arrived. As I was speaking his name. So what we'll do, since he's arrived, is we'll go into work session on the last item, which is House Bill 3343. And ask Representative Cinceri, we understand that the Committee on Education would like to have this bill referred there, and we were just curious. You don't have to tell us, but we were curious as to...
What's the number? Sir?
It's 3343. It's the last one on the agenda. It has a relating to juveniles relating clause. We were not moving it in this committee, but we understand that your committee may like to have it.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we would. And just for this committee's information, one of the things that we're interested in is allowing parents to be notified if their children's names appear on a hit list at school somewhere.
Oh. Hit list?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I wonder if the good representatives would tell us what else they're looking at besides the hit list.
Actually, that's the only thing at this point. That was we were going to try to put that in 344, but the reflating clause in that bill was too narrow.
Okay. Well, we will entertain a motion since we're in work session on House Bill 3343.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3343 to the Committee on Education.
All right. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there a discussion? Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair?
Oh, yes, Mr. Pozanski.
Based on what we've heard, I will be supporting the motion, reserving whatever comes out of there to maybe have a different opinion.
Eagerly anticipating.
Oh, we always need to read what they do.
All right. Chairman, I sense distrust.
No distrust. I understand you have some wild people in that committee down there that you may not be able to keep.
Only in the center of the diocese.
Right. That's right.
The committee administrator.
All right. Further discussion on the motion. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion is adopted. House Bill 3343 is referred to the Committee on Education with no recommendation. That was assumed in the motion. All right. House Bill 2772. We'll go into work session on House Bill 2772. Council, where are we on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the Dash 2 amendments, which would replace the original bill. They are similar to the Dash 1 amendments with modifications per the committee's request. And the way that the Dash 1 amendments have been modified are as follows. The Dash 1 amendments provided that a motor vehicle used by or with the knowledge of the owner in a drive-by shooting is subject to forfeiture. The dash twos take away the or with the knowledge of provision. So really, in effect, the owner would have to be driving the vehicle.
Or a passenger in the vehicle. Let's be careful here.
That
record says used by the owner, so I would assume that if the owner is sitting next to someone else is driving, it's still being used by the owner.
Used by the owner in a drive-by shooting.
Okay.
That was the intent of the request, was that if the owner is in the car at the time. So I just want to clarify that.
Yeah, it appears that it is not limited just to the driver, or the owner being the driver at the time of the shooting.
To Mr. Horton, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but...
Oh, no, that's fine. The other portion that was deleted is a provision that provided that all proceeds from a forfeiture under this, this section would be used for educational programs concerning guns and gun safety.
The concern there was we don't have any formula for that, and that we don't know if there's one vehicle forfeited or 1,000 or 100 or whatever. After we've had some experience with that, we could see whether or not there's a sufficient volume to make it worthwhile to have a special formula as opposed to the current statutory scheme, which has already been developed very carefully in regard to all forfeiture elements. Go ahead. Yes.
If I could just get a clarification from counsel, RS 475A is the same reference that we had in forfeiture with anything that was seized going to the seizing agency, and I just wonder if you could clarify that in fact has been removed.
It has, per my understanding.
No, it says in ORS Chapter 475A is referenced.
Well, but not 005 is... Reverend was asking that.
Well, the answer is that the comprehensive forfeiture statute will be locked in, that this would be a forfeiture under that statute, which has a formula for the whole process.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Yes, Reverend Bowman.
I understand Section 1, 2, and 3, but the A through H underneath, if the goal is to take somebody's vehicle, if they're involved in a drive-by shooting, I guess I'm confused about the listing of intimidation, assault on a police officer, unless they're trying to shoot the police officer in a drive-by shooting, recklessly endangering another, menacing. I mean, all these. What's the connection to the drive-by shooting?
The idea
in taking a vehicle.
That's a good question. The general concept of drive-by shooting, as we refer to, usually means you're shooting at or near somebody or in an inhabited area, and this is to get you away from, say somebody is out on the beach and they shoot at a rock on the beach. Now, there's probably another illegal discharge in a park or some such thing, but it's not really the drive-by shooting that we were trying to get at. So we're trying to make sure we're talking about it in some circumstance where there's in danger that's to other human beings.
Mm.
Do I have a motion on the dash two amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Simmons? Representative Kozanski, excuse me.
I guess before I make that motion, I want just a little bit more discussion. Before we went back on the record, you and I had talked, and I guess I want counsel to give us his opinion, or maybe... I see Mr. Verdenke's here, who's been on the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Committee since its inception, regarding whether, if we and when this is passed, this would be serve as a preemption for any local forfeiture ordinances that may be on the books regarding drive-by shootings.
If I may, I've responded in two ways. First of all, in our discussion off the record before we started up, I happen to agree with Representative Kozanski that ultimately we ought to have a statewide forfeiture statute, and that ought to preempt all these various local ordinances that are popping up with different procedures. Unfortunately, with this relating clause, we can only deal with forfeiture of motor vehicles. And so what we intend here, though, is this is the forfeiture statute about drive-by shootings with motor vehicles. We're not intending to preempt other kinds of motor vehicle forfeitures.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I think that's the point, is that if we're going to start going statewide, because this will be the first one outside of the current state prohibited conduct, which is regarding drugs, that we are setting the record that if the state is, in fact, providing for, on a statewide basis, forfeiture for a specific prohibited conduct, that it in itself will be the law of the state. What I don't want to see is that we have half a dozen different counties or cities addressing forfeiture in their own scheme that is conflicted to the same prohibited conduct that's prohibited statewide.
And I agree with you. And the intent here is we are establishing the forfeiture process for this conduct. There may be other conduct, and that's not...
The UII is the one that we know that's already being addressed at different levels in the sense of cities and counties, and that is not the same prohibited conduct as drive-by shootings. But if sometime, I know that there's a bill that's potentially coming out of, if it hasn't already been passed out of civil judiciary, that may in fact set up a scheme for statewide forfeiture regarding UII. And so I just want to make sure that we're in...
On the same page. Yes.
Yes.
Representative Simmons.
I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2772.
Representative Simmons moves the dash two amendments to 2772. Is there discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I, on the dash one amendments, was removed. Unlawful use of a weapon. Why was that?
Counsel?
That was per the committee's request.
I did have...
Per the committee?
Well, during discussion, there was a... I have it marked too. To delete it. Go ahead.
And if I may, I think, if I recall correctly, that the logic behind that was that the dash two amendments currently on lines 6 through 8 talk about the discharge of a firearm while committing or attempting to commit a crime, and that pretty much overlaps with the very definition of unlawful use of a weapon in the first place.
We're making this unlawful already, so it was a redundancy.
I see.
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
Well,
Before I say this, I just want to make sure, because I know there was some discussion. The discussion also was from Representative Censeri talking about the different types of weapons that's covered under 166.220, and here we're focusing on the use of firearms, if I remember correctly.
Further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I need to ask one other question.
Sure.
When we were talking earlier, I thought I heard counsel say that Section 1 deals with the driver or a passenger.
It has to, well, no, I was clarifying because he made it sound like the owner had to be driving. This only allows forfeiture if the owner is in the motor vehicle, but when we say used by the owner might be sitting next to the driver, but the owner has to be present.
I see.
Owner could be the shooter, but not the driver.
Okay,
or
got
the passenger.
So if you own a motor vehicle and you're driving, don't let anybody else shoot out of the car.
Unless you have a really old car.
Not even then, Mr. Chair.
Just kidding, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, it's illegal not only during hunting season, but any other time to shoot from a road or a motor vehicle, and we will not be encouraging that kind of behavior on the record.
Okay.
Okay.
The motion's in front of us. Is there any objection to the motion to adopt the dash two amendments to 2772? Seeing no objection, the dash two amendments are adopted. Do I have a motion on the bill?
Chair,
Representative Pazansky.
Move the bill as adopted to the floor with a deep pass recommendation. I assume this will not... do we have a fiscal on this floor?
Yes.
I assume it's not going to happen. I need to go...
It does not need to go to Ways.
It does not need to go to Ways and Means.
To the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Pazansky moves that House Bill 2772 as amended be referred to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? Seeing no objection, the motion is adopted. House Bill 2772, as amended, is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Volunteer for a carrier?
Mr. Chair, that's your bill. Did you want it?
I'll carry this one, unless Representative Simmons really wants it.
Either way, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Mannix, the chair, will carry that bill. Thank you. I see that Senator Gordley is here, and although we're going to wait on other aspects of 2535 till we get through the specific bills we have here for prompt action, I will, first of all, close the work session on House Bill 2772 and open our work session on House Bill 2535 for purposes at this time of allowing Senator Gordley to testify. Welcome to the committee, and good morning.
Thank you very much, and good morning to all of you. As you know, the Senate has just gone into session, but I did want to come down, Mr. Chair, and for the record, I'm Avell Gordley, representing Senate District 10, which covers neighborhoods in Northeast and Southeast Portland. Mr. Chair, I want to first acknowledge your leadership and willingness to grapple with these contentious and, at the same time, very critical issues that affect our young people and also our public health. And, Mr. Chair, I would like to encourage you and the committee to consider the language of Senate Bill 1300. Mr. Chair and I had a very brief conversation in the hall about Senate Bill 1300. You've also received a copy of that bill. And consider Senate Bill 996 within your concept of an omnibus firearms reform act. And I would like to encourage your adoption of the process suggested by Senate Bill 1300 and Senate Bill 996. And as contentious as the issues are around guns, public safety, and the Second Amendment are, we do need to devise a framework from which to approach the issue as policymakers and for the best benefit of all Oregonians. It is critical that the state police are able to complete background checks for every gun sold or transferred. It is critical that safe use and storage standards be established and disseminated to gun owners, particularly when children may have accidental access to firearms. Senator Courtney and I have supported the expansion of the Eddie Eagle program across this state for awareness and safety around firearms of our smallest and most vulnerable children, and we must prohibit guns on school premises. I do disagree with the concealed weapon portion of House Bill 2535. Rather, we need to require a compelling need in order to obtain a concealed weapons license. These issues, Mr. Chair, need to be addressed in a comprehensive and deliberative fashion, and you most certainly have constructed a format to allow that to happen. I urge your support for establishing a violent injury task force to review pertinent laws, to gather appropriate data, and to hold public hearings and dialogue for future legislative proposals. It is very clear to me that this multidisciplinary issue affects public safety, it affects education, and it affects our public health. We need to broaden the discussion and approach the myriad of issues as only a legislative task force can. And so I encourage your continued leadership and the leadership of this committee to create a workable framework, again, borrowing issues from Senate Bill 1300 and from House Bill 2535, to establish a credible and open process that Oregonians can participate in and trust. And again, Mr. Chair, I would just say that I believe you have constructed a format that allows us to do just that. I appreciate the opportunity to get these few remarks on the record as you are considering House Bill 2535, and I'm willing to come back at another time to explore these issues with you.
Thank you very much, Senator. Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Senator Gordley. Has Senate Bill 1300 gone through the process on the Senate side?
It has not. It is in the Senate Judiciary Committee and is not scheduled for a hearing. I sent a memorandum and the bill over to Senator Mannix a week or so ago and asked for his consideration of the issues in this committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator. We appreciate your coming this morning.
Thank you.
We will recess the work session on House Bill 2535. And move into work session on House Bill 3044. Colleagues, we have dash three amendments, and I'll invite Mr. DeLashman up for a moment. Excuse me. We have a hand engrossed version. We have the dash twos, and then we have the dash threes. You're correct, folks.
I was sending them both new today.
But then that hand engrossed.
Mr. DeLashman, do you want to help us with that? Good morning.
Dash 3 is the ones we're working off. There was two minor changes and to the dash 3s through drafting that were confusing. Again, for the record, Brian DeLashman, Oregon Council Police Association.
Now, Mr. DeLashman, let's jump quickly to a couple of points. This is the dash 3s are, you are the proponent of this bill, and the dash 3s reflect the modified version based on your conversations with others.
Yes, with the Oregon Health Division and the State Court Administrators, all the parties that were told to go away and figure out the technical aspects of this bill. All are in agreement with the dash threes with the two minor technical amendments.
Yes.
Brian, could you give us clarification as to what the dash twos represented and whether or not they're still in play?
Dash ones and the dash twos are not in play. The dash twos are reflected in the dash threes. The dash ones are reflected in the dash threes. So the only one in play right now is the dash threes, and again, there are two minor modifications to the dash threes that were discussed this morning.
Now, Mr. Delashman, I have made some handwritten notations, and I see the version that's been copied and sent around is slightly different. First of all, we have the dash threes here. Line 6 and 7, the handwritten notation I made based on my hallway conversation was that it was going to include the language in the quotes here on line 6. The petition must also include information, then jumping to line 7, sufficient to identify the alleged source person, and then I wrote in, and the location of the source person if known. Now, there is another handwritten version that's been sent to me that's slightly different and I think more confusing.
Yeah, actually, I preferred that language in that sentence, but...
What I just read or what I was about to refer?
What you just read.
Then what I'll do is, colleagues, I'll read this slowly and tell you what the proposed changes are. And this is based on your conversation, Mr. Swank?
Yes.
That on the dash threes that you have in front of you, the proposal is to change line 7 only. And on line 7, instead of the word locate, to use the word identify, and then to add the phrase after person, the following phrase, and the location of the source person, comma, if known, period. Now, first of all, this is a conceptual amendment technically, so I need to ask unanimous consent to suspend the rules to allow consideration of the conceptual amendment.
Mr. Chair, before we go there, can you read that last part again, and
yes,
the location?
And the location of the source person, comma, if known.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up with, regarding the other engrossed one you had.
Yes.
I heard a but.
Same concept, but just different language to get to the same thing. Mr. Swank believed that this language, the qualifier on the end, if available, could in fact be identified back to the identity and the location. I think it's, however, very clear that what we're talking about is the identity, you have to have the identity and the location if available. I think that language reads fine.
So the version I've just talked about is actually requires more of the petitioner than the other version.
Yeah. No, I just need for clarification.
So is there any objection to suspension of the rules to allow consideration of a conceptual amendment? Hearing no objection, the rules are suspended for that purpose. Do I hear a motion, first of all, to adopt the... I'll ask for a motion to adopt the dash three amendments with the revision that line 7 would now read as follows. Sufficient to identify the alleged source person and the location of the source person, comma, if known, period, close quote, period. Representative Sinceri so moves. Mr. Gelashman, did you want to comment on that?
Not on that. There's the one additional amendment. That's the E, which I also provided. The drafters left off one revision.
All right, we'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
First of all, we have that motion in front of us, and then we'll hear another proposal from Mr. Gelashman. Is there any objection to the motion to adopt the dash three with that revision? Hearing no objection, the dash three with that revision is adopted. Now, Mr. Delashman, you had another addition that you wanted to propose that's on this handwritten version.
Yes, actually, this was, again, proposed by the State Court Administrators and was left out of the dash three. It actually would read, it'd be a new E on page 2 at the end, and it would read, the order is enforceable through the contempt powers of the court.
All right, that's the intended additional language.
Yes.
Let's first ask if there's any objection to suspension of the rules to allow consideration of this conceptual amendment. Seeing no objection, the rules are suspended to allow consideration. Is there a motion to amend the dash three amendments that are now in the bill to add that? Representative Sinceri moves to amend the dash three amendments to add at the end of the dash three amendment subsection E to read, the order is enforceable through the contempt powers of the court, period. Now, Mr. Delashman, do you have any problem with that?
No, that's fine. Actually, that was an oversight, I think, in the drafting.
All right. Discussion on the motion.
The order is enforceable through the contempt powers of the court?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further discussion on that motion? objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the dash three amendments are further amended, and they're, of course, part of the bill. Representative Bowman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I had a question about the source person. Who pays for the test for the source person?
Under this, it depends on whether they're in custody or not in custody. If they're in custody, the assumption is that the jurisdiction that's got them in source, for example, would do DOC. If the source person is not in custody, then obviously the source person would need to be paid for by themselves, the testing of itself.
Mr. Chair?
And that would also be an issue to be presented to the court so that the person could ask that someone else pay for it. Go ahead, Representative Bowman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the document clearly says that the person who's requesting the test cannot be charged. And I'm just wondering why, if someone is giving their body fluids, we're also going to make them pay for that privilege.
Mr. Zalashman, you want to respond to that?
Well, obviously that may be an issue that's out there, and I think that that's an issue that the court may be able to address. I don't have a straightforward answer to you. We went all the way through this with the state court administrators trying to figure out, okay, if it's in a custody situation, who pays for it, if it's not, and that's just kind of the way we laid it out. Obviously, if the court, if there's two screens, and we had talked about this before when we had the bill up, two screens being that a medical personnel would make the original judgment before it went to the petition that there was sufficient evidence that there was some exposure, and then the court makes the judgment that there's sufficient exposure, then I guess we felt it was probably the right course to do to have the person that's a source person pay for that particular blood test unless they're in the custody.
Well,
let me call up Mr. Swank, too, in case you need to comment on anything.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I feel very strongly that, I mean, if somebody, you know, you're assuming that there's probable cause to have them tested, so, you know, they get tested. But if you find out in a lot of cases that they, in fact, are not infected, and so you've got an individual that may or may not be charged with something, who you have required to give their body fluids, and then you're saying, by the way, here's your bill. For that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, let me clarify.
Well,
Mr. Swank.
Are you responding to this particular point and clearing it up so it doesn't become a point of contention?
Then actually,
if
you look at the bill rather than the amendment, look at sub 6, line 30, 31, and 32. Actually, 31 and 32. The cost of any testing ordered under this section shall be the responsibility of the employer of the petitioner.
So the government agency that the person works for has to pay for it.
Okay, and I read that to mean just the employee.
I appreciate your bringing that up.
Yeah. Thank you.
I apologize. I went brain dead for a little while.
It happens to all of us.
Right. Okay. Happens in this building, Mr. Lashman. Resident Pazansky.
This chair, since the record's is thoroughly confused at this point, the bottom line is the source person that's been identified to give the bodily fluids, they themselves are not going to be required to pay for this test.
Chair Mannix, Representative Pazansky, for the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office. I apologize for walking in late, but I was tied up with the Senator. I assume you're talking about the Dash 3 amendments.
We have the bill in front of us. We've already adopted the Dash 3 amendments. The question is, does the source person have to pay for this test?
The answer is on page 2, no.
Thank you. What line, just to make sure we're covering this?
It's page 2, lines 31 and 32.
All right. Thank you. Very good. Thank you very much.
Again, I apologize for the confusion.
Do I have a motion to send this bill to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation?
So moved.
All right. Representative Bowman, so moves.
Sure.
Representative Pazansky.
Just to make certain, since this does have a responsibility for the cost that could be at the state, is there a need to send this out?
We've quietly conferred, and from what we can pick up at this point, there is not.
Right.
So the motion is to send this to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Is there any objection to the motion? Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. This bill is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. All right. Representative Montgomery is the sponsor. Does he have any particular interest in the matter? Or did you want to carry this, Representative Gianella?
Sure.
All right. We'll have Representative Gianella carry it. She hasn't been hit for a while. unless Representative Montgomery asks, he requests it.
I hope so.
Primary Montgomery, secondary Gianella. There you go. I shouldn't use the term carrier here. we'll close the work session at 3:04.
Even when we do good stuff, we get in trouble.
Get in trouble. Should also think 2 seconds before I speak. House Bill 2396. And folks, if you're wondering, we only have two more, I hope, quickies before we get to 2535. But we are actually moving bills here, which is what our job is supposed to be at this point in the session. Council, where are we on House Bill 2396 as I call us into work session?
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I look for my own bill, the committee does have on 2396 the -1 amendments. What the original bill did was allow for any crime, either a felony or misdemeanor, that where a youth used a firearm, to have that crime waived up to adult court. There are certainly crimes that are misdemeanors where a youth could use or attempt to use a firearm, such as menacing, hunting in cemeteries, something like that. So what the -1 amendments do is provide that any
Class C felony.
And the reason that it doesn't need to read felony is because any Class A or B felony already automatically can be waived up.
So for those who are here paying attention to firearms issues, and you already missed us dealing with drive-by shootings and forfeiture of motor vehicles, you can pick up on that bill later. We have in front of us now 2396, which deals with waiver of use to adult court. The proposal is, first originally was that any crime in which the youth used or threatened to use a firearm could be waived. Let's make sure I've got the language clear here. This is a may waive provision, and it's not a required to waive. The -1 amendment broadens the waiver authority for any Class C felony in which the youth used or threatened to use a firearm. And that, as I understand it, Mr. Horton, gives a juvenile court authority to waive to adult court, but does not require the waiver.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Do I have a motion, first of all, on the -1 amendment, which is in front of us?
So moved.
Representative Przanski moves adoption of the -1 amendment. Discussion on the -1 amendment. Representative Bowman?
Mr. Chair, I just need an area of clarification of current law. Currently, does not the juvenile court have the authority to request a waiver for a kid that's 15 years of age to adult court if in the juvenile court's opinion it warrants them going to adult court for that crime?
For certain crimes, not for all crimes. That is my understanding of the law, at least.
There's a limited list of Class C felonies.
Yeah.
Representative Przanski, did you want to comment on that?
Mr. Chair, I did. As soon as I was hearing the question, I just looked down here. I'm wondering for text if we need to have the amendment set out by itself as a sub D or whether it should be a sub F of the sub C.
What did he
because,
say?
Because the sub C now says if any of the following is Class C felonies. Now, those are specific crimes that are listed. Maybe we need to leave it out there as a more general, because there's multiple Class C's that I guess where I understand it now, because it's where the firearm's being used in any Class C felony.
Exactly.
Okay.
So
never mind.
The short answer is not all felonies are waivable. The court does not have the authority, except for this limited list of felonies, and there are other felonies where you could be using a firearm or threaten to use a firearm, and they are not waivable to adult court right now. And this would allow them to be, but would not require them to be.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess for the record, I guess my concern with this is we now have young people, and it's not the 15-year-olds that I'm referring to, but under 18, who, if they're charged right now with a ballot measure 11 crime, the district attorney will say, if you agree to be sentenced in adult court, and plead to this, then you get the sentence. So my concern is, are we putting more power in the hands of the district attorney? Are we truly, in fact, leaving it to judicial discretion? Because the way the current law works, by the time they get to the judge, the deal's already been struck.
Well, that's a matter for interpretation, but here it's the judge who has to make the decision as to, the judge says yes or no, not the district attorney. District attorney makes the request,
makes
on motion.
So it's presumptive, it's not a mandatory, such as Measure 11.
Well, Measure 11 is a mandatory that they go to adult court,
right,
in a lot of cases, but that's what happens before they get to court, is that decision is made.
But the bottom line on the way this is set up, the district attorney does not have the exclusive power to force someone that's charged with any Class C felony, a youth, using or threatened to use a firearm to go into circuit court. They have to petition the court, and the court has to basically consent or approve that motion. As in a Measure 11, it's mandatory, automatic. And that's where the concern that you have about Lenoir County DA's office, because they have that authority. That's why they're cutting these other deals that bring them in, where there would be an offense that was not mandatory waived in because of the agreement. So this still leaves the power with the judge.
Any other questions on the dash? I sent some concerns, so I'm going to ask the court to call the roll. The motion is to adopt the Dash 1 Amendment to 2396.
I think they have way too much power.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
It's a good try.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunseri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
Aye.
Aye. The motion's carried. The Dash 1 amendments are adopted. Do I have a motion? Yes, Representative Brzezinski.
Move the bill as it's been amended by this committee to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? I sense objection. Please call the roll on the motion.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunseri?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye. The motion is carried. House Bill 2396 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I see Representative Westland was the one who requested this bill, so I'll give him first choice as to being carrier. You can be the primary choice. Is there a volunteer for second choice? Representative Simmons. All right. We'll give you the second one on this one. And that closes the work session on House Bill 2396. We next move into work session on House Bill 2351. And we have that bill in front of us. Council, this is the ballot title for the referral that was passed out by the committee last week.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, and it is within word limits, and it is here for the committee's consideration.
All right. The Dash 1 Amendment is the revised version reflecting the revisions to the other bill, House Bill 2562.
Correct.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This would go to the voters when?
November 2000, general election 2000.
Okay.
Representative Sunseri, do you move the Dash 1 Amendments to House Bill 2351?
Moved.
All right. Colleagues, we have that motion in front of us. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I want to object to us setting out a ballot title from this body for a measure that's going to be heard and are placed before the voters, if it goes to the voters, in November of the year 2000. Clearly, the power that the legislature has doesn't give us the authority to do this, but my understanding and intent, unless it's an extremely complicated issue, such as what we saw with the referral of Measure 50 or Measure 47, or if there's a shortness in time to be able to let the traditional process to be used, I would be objecting because there does not seem to be a urgency or a complexity to not allow this to go through the regular process that is set up in the statutes.
Well, as it stands right now, this simply has the Legislative Assembly preparing its own certified ballot title, something which we can do. We're double-checking, but the way the amendment was supposed to read and was requested was to allow Supreme Court review of the ballot title. Mr. Fidanky has pointed out to us in the past that the governor does not like taking away Supreme Court review, but and as a middle ground where the legislature establishes their own certified ballot title, they stand in the place of the Attorney General, but they do not substitute for the Supreme Court. Yeah, it looks like 235 is still in there.
It is still in there, but this is just one person. Because I think there's two different ways.
Back to the drawing board?
No, I see this 235, Court Review of Explanatory Statement. And that has been left in, but that has to do with the Secretary of State's hearing process. And, well, I had understood from legislative counsel that this version allowed Supreme Court review, but I would like to have a, I'd like to make sure of that. So while this is pending, I'm going to make sure we double-check with legislative counsel that they drafted it that way. So we will, while this is pending, recess the hearing on House Bill 2351. That's not a hearing, excuse me, work session. And we will move into work session on House Bill 2535. So we are in the work session, which allows us to invite testimony. And I understand that we have some representatives of law enforcement here today, as well as some representatives of advocates for the firearms community and other advocates for public safety issues. We do not have formal amendments in front of us at this point. We have had some memos which I've distributed with ideas for this bill. We are in the idea discussion phase, but the work session allows us to focus in a bit more. And I'm going to invite up a couple of representatives of law enforcement to talk about the concepts that are covered by the latest memo which I circulated. I'm going to put that memo into the record. I don't have it with me right now, but we'll make sure that's put into record. Colleagues, I've circulated that memo to the members of the committee. It's just a concept piece so that we have something to talk about. And I see Representative of State Police and the Sheriff's Association, and why don't we do the Chiefs of Police, Sheriffs, and State Police first. Invite you gentlemen up.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, as they're coming up, you are aware the session starts at 10:30 this morning.
No, I wasn't. I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. We'll cover this a little bit, and if we get some quick answers, we can go back in and close out. The only other bill we had to work on today was 2351, so... Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Gentlemen, I understand something's going on in another committee on Senate Bill 700. In fact, the first of you to introduce yourself might tell us what's happened or what is happening if you know. But why don't we start off with Mr. Campbell to my right.
Shall I get to tell you, Mr. Chair, yes. Members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Campbell with the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. Senate Bill 700 was moved out of the Business and Consumer Affairs Committee this morning to the floor without recommendation. It was not amended and went in its current form.
Well, just to get things rolling, you've seen some memoranda from me in regard to ideas for House Bill 2535, and I'll put into the record the latest version of that so that we'll have that in the record as to this bill. We had an earlier dash one set of amendments, but that was very rough and it doesn't really reflect where we've been heading, except part of it does. The idea is to try to come up with a comprehensive approach to firearms issues. Would you like to comment generally on that, Mr. Campbell, on behalf of the Chiefs of Police?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I am referring to this is the May 3rd, 99 version. I will, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity for all of us to have an opportunity to try to work through this difficult issue and to be able to come to some creative solutions to ways we can ensure that background checks are done within the gun show environment and to encourage those that are selling guns to utilize a system that does provide for the background check. And to that degree, this comprehensive approach does include some very I think valuable approaches. The one I want to mention to begin with, and I don't know if you wanted to go by item or if
because of the timing, I could probably only give you each a couple of minutes. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Let me then comment on
today.
Let me comment on one part of this that I think is very valuable. It's the what I would call the 25-gun standard. Wherever there are 25 guns available for sale, a background check would have to be done, which would take care of a number of arenas that I think, including the gun shows, where those guns are already present. And so it sets a standard based on the number of guns. I think that's a creative solution to this problem. Senate Bill 700 addresses it through a definition of what a gun show and a flea market is. This does it a little differently. I think it's a creative approach. The other thing that I think is extremely valuable is any time that we get a chance to give an incentive for the public to utilize a system of background checks. In other words, if I'm selling Representative Prezanski a gun, I'm a private citizen, I would have access to that process to actually call the state police system. For a small fee, I could, from the state police, get an approval or a disapproval based on that sale. That would give me, as the gun seller, some assurance that the person buying the gun is indeed entitled to it. It's not prohibited because they're a felon or because of some mental illness restriction or a domestic violence restriction or any number of restrictions. So I think that's a very positive part of the bill because it is voluntary, and in exchange for utilizing that system, there's some level of civil liability protection. It's not protection for the product that's sold. If the product is bad, that's not protected. But for the person that's willing to use the system, they sell a gun in good faith to someone. They go around, that person they sell to does commit a crime subsequent. They would be protected from that, provided it's not a straw sale.
I'm going to interrupt you and ask, since you gentlemen are here, ask Mr. Spencer to comment briefly, and I'm watching the clock. We will come back to this.
That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Russ Spencer on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Again, we appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's been a very interesting negotiating process, and I hope will turn out to be a fruitful one. I think to us, the key issues that this boils down to are the issues of record retention and the issues of reciprocity on concealed handgun licenses. The sheriff's position, and I believe it is a position shared by my peers here in law enforcement, is that we support records retention on the sale of handguns, both purchaser and purchasee, for 5 years. On long guns, we are willing to look at a modified proposal there if it is the desire of the legislature to bring long guns into the Oregon system. We would be looking at, I think, anywhere from a year to 5 years on retention of records of the seller, the purchaser. I think that's a number that needs to be discussed. That has policy implications, and to a certain degree, we defer to the state police on that as they have to assure the integrity of their record-keeping system.
Let me shift quickly, if I may, then, to the state police. I am watching the clock, and we're going to have to jump back to we do have some clearance on these other amendments. Please give you a quick shot at this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bob Smith, captain with the Oregon State Police, and to the point, for expediency towards the records issue, reaffirming Russ Spencer's position in the record retention on handguns being 5 years for under the current records that are being kept, for that to remain the same, and knowing that within the negotiation process and working out through the long gun issues, if that is the case that in policy that they get brought in, then we're in that discussion now in good faith to determine what that record retention length would be.
I'm going to ask each of this leading question. If you want to demur on it, I'll let you demur on it, meaning put it off. But
thank you.
Because Bob's done
you're
now?
Assuming the records retention issue was resolved to your satisfaction, and knowing that you are already committed to support of Senate Bill 700, and without detracting from your support of Senate Bill 700, which of these two bills' proposals, the May 3 memo on House Bill 2535 or Senate Bill 700, if given the choice, would you prefer?
Are we demurring them?
You're allowed to stand on your saying before that you support Senate Bill 700. you're allowed to assume for purposes of this discussion that the records retention issue is resolved to your satisfaction. And you have this plate in front of you. You've got Senate Bill 700 and you've got House Bill 2535. And you get to choose one or the other.
Blending.
Mr. Chairman, I will take the courageous stand of saying that I'd have to check with my client on that before I felt comfortable in committing a position.
All right.
Another profile in courage for your consideration.
I didn't warn you ahead of time about this, so I'm just asking.
Mr. Chair, I mentioned this has been a good process. The part that I would still be concerned with in this package is as it came out in the most recent memo, it has to do with the reciprocity issue in item 7B.
Let's assume also for purposes of this question that 7B is eliminated.
I don't want to take more than my allotted time and Captain Bob.
Mr. Chair.
Very good.
How about you, Captain Smith?
Mr. Chair, thank you for this opportunity. have great faith in our process that we're going through right now in discussion of the issues in preparing and certainly think that merits of where we're going in relationship to the memo that's produced has a very high value. And to a couple of the issues that we've talked about in relationship to the records and to the reciprocity issues, those certainly I think on the table have been the identifiable key pieces as to where a lot of the contention is out of this. And so we are absolutely committed to trying to work through to find the best place to be. And I'd defer in relationship just to seeing the language because
sure.
I think we're headed in a terrific position.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you. We will have you back. We'll have everybody back on these issues. Maybe Senate Bill 700 will come to us too so we can look at that. In any event, the work session on House Bill 2535 is closed.
Thank you.
We are returning to House Bill 2351. We were in recess. I'm reopening the work session on 2351. We had a motion pending. Did we have a motion? Yes, from Representative Sinceri to adopt the dash one. We have checked with Legislative Council and checked the statutes books. I can represent to you that this does not take out the Supreme Court review of the ballot title. It is the equivalent of a certified ballot title, which then is subject to review. However, that doesn't mean that you have to like it. I think Representative Posansky's point is he'd rather have the full flow of the process. I shouldn't speak for him.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, bottom line, I mean, we got a process when this is not an urgency matter that's coming to the voters like in June of this year or July. I just think the Attorney General is the people that should have the opportunity to draft, and then we should go the process of allowing proponents, opponents, and whoever else to have input that way instead of going through a review process to the Supreme Court based on the language here without the ability to go through that give-and-take procedure that's there.
Mr. Fidenke asked for the opportunity to make a quick comment. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank you. David Fidenke, Executive Director, ACLU of Oregon. The statutes do provide a procedure, as the Chair noted, for the legislature to draft a ballot title in the case of a measure referred by the legislature. And I believe by just deleting the first phrase in Section 1 of the -1 amendments, notwithstanding RS 250.035, you would be accomplishing that and maintaining the same standards that the court uses for
would
reviewing
ballot
title.
Would we increase our comfort level by taking that phrase out?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to...
But, Mr. Chair, there is another right. point which is more complicated. There is not, as far as I can tell, a procedure for the legislature to draft explanatory statements, which is the reason on page 2 of the -1 amendments that all of the explanatory statement provisions of the ORS are essentially thrown aside for purposes of this explanatory statement. So there could not be court review of this explanatory statement, which I believe would be a problem for the governor, but I certainly can't speak for the governor. I don't know if this issue has come up in recent years.
So we are explaining ourselves. All right. Thank you, Mr. Fidenke. Representative Simmons, you had a comment?
Mr. Chair, I just moved the bill.
We have the -1 amendments in front of us. Let's take a vote on the motion to adopt the -1 amendments as they stand.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunzeri?
Aye.
Vice Chair Prozanski?
No.
Chair Manning?
Aye. The motion is carried. Representative Simmons?
Mr. Chair, I'd move bill before the due process recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Further discussion? We'll call the roll on the motion.
No.
Thank you, Representative Bowman. Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunzeri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Prozanski?
No.
Chair Manning?
Aye. The motion is adopted. House Bill 2351 is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Notice of possible minority report on 2351
is indicated, and I'll assign myself to be the carrier on this. With that, the work session is concluded, and the committee is adjourned. Thank you all.